Professors FM.
Hey, welcome everyone. Welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast. Mike Lewis and Doug Battle. It's November, Doug. Back when I was a kid, there was a baseball player named Mr. November, Reggie Jackson, and he was the biggest sports star in America. Now the World Series is, well, is it on the front page of ESPN, Doug?
Mike, I was just on ESPN's website, and top 10 headlines are all NBA, NFL, hockey, Caitlin Clark, anything but baseball. Baseball has completely fallen off of the minds, the top of mind of sports fans and sports media.
Okay, so maybe this is me with a little bit of caveman DNA still going on. Caitlin Clark is on the front page of ESPN, and the World Series does not appear to be there. Oh, like, no, you just have to scroll down like four more stories to get to the World Series.
Oh, it's on there. So it's still going on.
Yeah.
I don't know if the average sports fan would know that it's happening. Look, U.S. men's national team, Dabo Swinney saying mean things to a caller, an article about the LSU quarterback, DeMar Hamlin, even Purdue basketball story, women's basketball story, women's volleyball story. I'm still not too based. There it is. So it's under flex and super flex rankings for fantasy football. So not even the top fantasy football players, but which fantasy football players do you want in your flex spot? Oh, yeah. And then the World Series is going on, too.
And so here's a question, legitimate question. And we are a self-selected audience here of two, right? And so we know who they are. If you were just poll Americans in general, what percentage could tell you the name of the Phoenix or the Arizona baseball team?
Maybe 20%. I don't know.
Okay.
Pretty bad.
I think that's probably a legitimate number.
Or 30%, a third maybe. What percentage of Americans could name one player from each team that's in the World Series presently? Off the top of their head. I know this sounds crazy. I'm thinking like 5%.
I think you're right. Probably 5 to 10%, maybe 20 to 30% come up with the Diamondbacks.
Right. And part of the reason I would even know, like I've been to Diamondbacks games. There's a lot of people who've never been to a baseball game or that haven't followed this, didn't play Little League Baseball, play for the Diamondbacks at one point. I feel like, Mike, on this show, I am like the token fanboy. I don't know what else to go by. And when it's something that I struggle with, like I struggle to think of the names of players in this series or really across the league right now in general, that's pretty telling. If I'm someone who's pretty engaged with sports culture, media, all that.
Mike Trout, Otani.
Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
They kept interrupting college football games with his name last year, so I'll never forget that one.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so the ratings, the viewership so far. 9.17 million on the first game. 8.15 in the second game, 8.13 million. These are astonishing numbers. The viewership is less than the number of people that live in Dallas, that live in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. So you really have to question, and I have not seen a breakdown on this, you have to question how many of these 8 million people are watching from – Phoenix is a big market with 6 million people, about the same size as Atlanta. Dallas is an enormous market. I think Phoenix is number 10 and Dallas is number 4. So good size markets. How many people are watching outside of those markets out of 8 million?
Do they have those? Does Nielsen do numbers on that?
Nielsen data tends to be fairly inaccessible and very expensive to buy. So it's like you have to,
you can only
find data when someone chooses to release it. But just as a logical experiment, when Atlanta's in the World Series, this whole town is breaking out their Braves jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
And look, even if it's half, if half are watching it in market and half are watching it out of market, 4 million people.
4 million people across 48 states. That's pretty brutal.
It's and the numbers when back in the 80s, 90s were probably 25 million. So it's absolutely I don't know what to say beyond we're in a different era. And if and think about how great it would have been if Taylor Swift had shown up. Those ratings might have tripled. So she travels with Taylor Swift travels more fans than attends MLB.
At what point do we start seeing sports contracts handed out to figures like that? She could be the most valuable figure in baseball if she were, as far as amount of dollars she would generate just being in a stadium. But at what point, Mike, do the players' salaries and salary caps, at what point is that affected by viewership? Because it seems like while we've had a decrease in viewership, you mentioned 25 million back in the glory days to now 8-9 somewhere in there in the World Series, but the salaries keep going up and the salary caps, or I guess there is no salary cap in baseball, but across sports in general, how direct is the correlation there?
It's negative at this point, Doug. Very strange thing where the viewership is dropping, but the rights fees keep going up, right?
And yeah, it's kind of odd to me. That's the case. Like, imagine if the Super Bowl had half as many viewers 10 years from now, but the price for to place an ad was the same or more. That wouldn't really make sense.
Here's a question for you, Doug. A little bit of an off-topic thing. Matthew Perry died this week, and that brought up all sorts of conversation about how many people watched this episode or that episode. And I think they said the finale was watched by 50 million people.
And is that all time, or is that at its premiere?
No, I think they said the finale. Oh, I see what you're saying. I think that's at the time of original release on NBC.
Whoa, that is a lot of people.
And they mentioned that when Rachel had her baby, I think they got 30 million. Whatever. So here's the question, right? If you want to reach, if this is 1992, 1995, and you want to reach 30 million people, you can go to Friends, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to reach 8 million, 10 million people, what are your options? And I think it boils down to the Grammys, the World Series, the NBA championship. And so it's paradoxical, right? That as things have become more fragmented, the stuff that is still really fractured has become incredibly valuable for traditional advertisers. Does that make sense?
I think so, but there's also a new wrinkle in it. And I say new relative, of course, to 1990 or whatever date we were previously talking about with social media, where if I want to reach 9 million people, I can directly reach 9 million people. Like I can pay to have my post or my advertisement, if I'm a corporation, be seen by 9 million people in a particular demographic that's highly targeted. And so nowadays, it's television and sports are competing against that as well, which does to me also seem like it would devalue something like a Super Bowl commercial, something like an ad during the World Series. And yet, like you were saying, there's almost this inverse correlation, and it trickles into the salaries the players and coaches are getting, and really just hard to make sense of.
And I think that's entirely fair. I think one of the stories that came out last week was Magic Johnson is now a billionaire. And I think they're saying is he's the fourth American sportsman billionaire. Jordan, Tiger Woods, LeBron James, and Magic Johnson, perhaps.
Yep.
I think we're going to start to see an explosion of sports billionaires, right? Because we're starting to see guys with $300 million contracts, right? Mm-hmm. That are not the only contract for their life. We're going to start to see guys making $1 billion in salary money. Again, at the same time that it seems like the rights fees should be cratering. Mm-hmm. The other thing that comes into all of this that you got to remember is that, look, you go to a game and there's a lot of advertising, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the amount of sponsorship in terms of signage and stadium naming deals that look, I think advertisers are scared. They're trying to figure out places to go. Now, I don't have a great feel for, and it's the question you were getting at. Why do I bother with a game that's getting 8 million people watching it when The Rock has 300 million Instagram followers? And I think that's something that's still working out for the people are still trying to work out.
Yeah, I think on the flip side of this with NIL, you want to reach 9 million people, go find the quarterback at Alabama, go find the quarterback at USC, Oklahoma, whatever. name your blue blood in football. But on the flip side to that, college basketball seems like we haven't had the household names of years past, whereas with college football, we're seeing this escalation in celebrity, even at schools like Colorado. I think that there are more people that could name three players off Colorado's football team than could name three players in college basketball that aren't playing for the team that they, you know, at their alma mater.
Okay. And you would accept the answer of Sanders Hunter?
Sure. That's like cheating. It technically suffices.
Yeah, look, college basketball, again, it's like this question of what percentage of people know the Diamondbacks are Arizona's team? Name a college basketball player going into this year. And look, someone says that to me, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. Caitlin Clark. You
know, and, name you a know, men's basketball player.
That doesn't play for the University of Illinois? I can't really think of one.
And again, Mike, you're somebody who's highly engaged relative to the rest of society with sports, with culture, with collegiate sports, with colleges in general. It's when someone that engaged struggles, and I find myself in the same boat, how much more is the general population just completely disconnected from something that used to be something that people connected over, something that was a common conversation starter at water coolers? And maybe the problem is that we don't have water coolers anymore, a lot of people at home, but maybe there's something else going on, and it's fascinating to observe.
Let me bounce a theory off you, just as you developed on the fly as we're talking. People talk a lot about the algorithm, right? The algorithm, yeah. Social media, that maybe we are almost living this kind of organic algorithm in terms of just the public kinds of, it doesn't even have to be an explicit one. Because when I think about the world of basketball, like I said, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, they maybe some of it was promotion, maybe some of it was organic.
Yeah.
But it takes on a life of its own. Look, I'm looking at some of my notes here. Whatever's happening with James Harden and Daryl Morey, I hear a lot more about that story than the World Series. I don't think that story is particularly important to anyone. But it's
also a story it's beating a dead horse at this point. We had plenty of coverage over the summer, plenty of coverage when the Sixers acquired Harden, when the Rockets acquired Harden, his whole stint in Houston, his stint in Philadelphia. It's a dead horse that is being beat by the media. And yet the dead horse is more interesting, apparently, than the World Series. There's some data telling them that we need to push this story, or this is the one that's going to get us more clicks.
Or it's a story that just, and again, it's almost chicken and egg stuff, right? It's
just
better because we talk a lot about it. And so I was getting to the one basketball player I do know on the men's side is Cooper Flagg, because Cooper Flagg has essentially caught the interest of, not in a major way, but to some extent. Look, last year, Doug, who was the top high school basketball player in the country last year? And you're going to get this wrong.
If you don't count Victor Wembanyama, I guess you said in the country.
Yeah.
Scoot Henderson. I'm trying to think. You mean going into last year?
It was Bronny James.
Oh, as far. Okay. I see what right. You're saying.
And so Cooper Flagg is not at the level of Bronny James. But if you get your information from social media, you're going to know more about Cooper Flagg than anyone else, because he's this – God, he looks like the next great Duke bully, doesn't he? The next great hated Duke player.
Kind of on that Mount Rushmore of – maybe not even Mount Rushmore. They've got so many of them, but of hated guys by Grayson Allen, Christian Laettner, Cooper Flagg. Yeah, it feels right.
He's dunking the basketball all over the place. He's 6
People are already making all these memes about him. That one with him, he's got something that's on fire and looking like some kind of protester or something in the Duke height, I guess, in his commitment reveal. And he's already, there's already anti-Cooper Flag propaganda all over the internet.
Perfect. Yeah. I have no idea how good this kid is, if he's going to be a program changer, if he's a one and done, or he's going to be 3 years at Duke. No idea. But it's the algorithm starts to feed us, and then you and I both know who he is, and now we have a conversation. And this is the same thing with Maurice and Harden, right? It's you got to break into that conversation.
baseball just hasn't broken into it. It's really struggled in recent years. We talked in a couple of weeks back, we were talking politics, not from a political perspective, but simply from a marketing perspective. And in a group of candidates that largely share the same values, what's it take to stand out, to be the one that grabs people's attention? And it feels like baseball is been in a similar position to any one of those candidates, and that it struggles to break through the crowd, to cut through a very crowded sports media space this time of year when you have basketball tipping off in both NBA and college. You've got hockey, you've got professional football, college football. The college football playoff just announced their first poll or ranking of the year, and baseball trying to cut through. Like, what's going on there that's making noise? And the answer is nothing right now.
Okay. But even the way you said that is, I don't know if it was intentional or it's generational. That phrase, baseball's trying to cut through. Mm-hmm. I bet you it's a big part of the story that they don't even understand that they're trying to cut through, right? That they've always had the attention, and it's slowly
by default. Yeah.
And they need to change their thinking, and they need to act more like Burger King than McDonald's, right? They're the number two, the follower brand, and they've got to figure out a way to get on the main stage. And
are they number two? Is my question, because three, and they're competing. It's like they're competing for three right now. It feels like
with who? Who do you think they're competing for three with?
I mean, like, we were just going down that ESPN front page. You had U.S. Men's National Team soccer articles before you got to them. You had Caitlin Clark before you got to them. You had both men's and women's college basketball before you got to them, and not to mention college football.
Yeah, I guess especially if you do men's college football, they're probably a clear number three, probably a clear number
four. Yeah. If you separate college and NFL, it's like college is at a point, and I almost feel like NIL has the playoff and all that. I think it's been good for the sports, like ranking in terms of the amount of discussion about it. It seemed to become more of a national conversation than it used to be.
Okay. I don't want to go down this path because I feel like we're going to just spin into the weeds. But it also seems like it destroyed college basketball. It enhanced
football
and may have destroyed basketball.
And my question is, why does it work for one and not the other?
And maybe it was just that college football was so much bigger, so much more of a robust brand that this kind of noise and NIL and the transfer portal, that those ended up enhancing it, whereas it fractured college basketball. Because like you're saying, no one knows who these guys are anymore.
It's strange. It's college basketball, I think, finds itself in a very similar position to Major League Baseball, in that they have all these brand names that have built-in audiences, built-in, like, your starting point is you have the local fandoms at each team that are going to show up for the games. They are going to watch the games to a degree. But beyond that, like, reaching the national audience, becoming a national conversation, I think is where they struggle. And one thing this makes me think of is, like, the NBA, it's my criticism, or I think a lot of people's criticism, is it's all about the individual players. Like, I view myself as a big NBA fan, but I don't have a team. That's weird, right? In sports, to not have a team but be a big fan. But
who is your closest thing to a team?
Like, it was Portland when Damian Lillard was there, but he's gone now. So it's when it was the
Spurs
with Duncan. No, not yet. Not really. I mean, I haven't even watched them play a game yet there. But all that to say is, like, that works somehow in this new era, in this digital media, influencer, heavy celebrity culture.
So basketball works. Okay.
Professional basketball works, I think, because there's the following of LeBron James. There's the Victor Wembanyama. There's the Damian Lillard, Luka Doncic. Go down the list. But and don't you college basketball, because we don't know these guys, and in an era where we're so focused, hyper-focused on these personalities and their stories individually, you only get a guy for a year. By the time you get to know him, he's gone. And so there's no interest. There's no engagement.
Hey, Doug, is there even a point to it? If Wemby had to play one year?
Yeah. But he didn't even have to play a year. And a lot of the top NBA prospects aren't, whether they're from the States or not. You get a good, like Scoot Henderson, mm-hmm. and played the G League last year, and he was one of the top picks in the draft. And we've seen that every year for the last couple of years.
Historically, the NBA really benefited from college basketball, right? Ready-made stars. Michael Jordan going to the Chicago Bulls. They're selling a tons of season tickets. It was so important for the league to get Patrick Ewing to New York that we have conspiracy theories that they froze the envelope so they could find it. Because, mm-hmm. again, it's going to sell tons of tickets, going to rejuvenate these brands. Why doesn't the NBA need college basketball as their feeder of brands anymore?
Well, I think partially is you got a lot of built-in star power with these overseas guys coming in. You mentioned Wembanyama, obviously coming in with a lot of hype. He's been performing at a high level for years at a professional level. Luka Doncic was playing at some kind of professional level since he was like 13 or 14. So he had 6 or 7 years of media attention and hype being built around him before he came to the league. And it seemed going into game one, everyone knew who he was and everyone was excited to see what he brought to the table. And so I think that's one advantage. And then for the rest of those guys, I think that playing basketball, like I saw an article saying, is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going to be MVP this year, the NBA? That's a guy who played 1 year at Kentucky. I think a lot of people were familiar with him, but certainly weren't intimately familiar in the way that we were with, say, Zion Williamson. But he's been in the NBA. You stay with one team or you stay in one league for, he's probably in year five, somewhere between 5 and 7, and play enough NBA 2K, watch enough NBA games, watch the All-Star game once a year. You start to become familiar with these guys and they organically do build those stars. And so I think that on top of that, social media, where people can individually watch these guys and these guys can put out content, and it's like that star power is built there. And so I don't think that college is it's such an essential part of the formula for building a basketball star nowadays.
Okay. And I think that's legit, that the old ecosphere where college basketball was the feeder has been largely disrupted. I suspect you're right that the international part of this story is really a critical part of it. You look at the top players in the NBA, right?
It's almost all of them.
There's a lot of international guys these days.
Jokic, Doncic. Shoot, I know we're probably premature with the Wembanyama, talking about Wembanyama in that conversation, but a lot of people are, it seems inevitable if he stays healthy. He's another one. It's almost hard to think of top players who aren't international. Like, it's getting that way. You still have LeBron, but it feels like the old guard. Like, it feels like the new guard is Luka Doncic. People talk about him being the face of the league. Obviously, Giannis. Now, Giannis being on a contender this year certainly keeps him in that conversation. And then the future of the league looking like Wemby.
Here's a question for you. And this almost sounds like a conspiracy theory. Is this something that if the NBA has aspirations to go international, to build, to make themselves essentially what soccer is globally, then do you want to – you almost don't want to have college basketball centered in America, right? You don't want that to be the center of the universe. You want talent to come from all corners of the world. Fair.
Yeah, and I don't think it has to be a conspiracy theory because I think that's just organically happening. I don't think it's a concentrated effort by the NBA. I think that they're getting what they would want. It's just happening.
Well, but it's interesting that it's happening. And you think about the G League or Ignite or some of these things. I guess I will always come back to just the notion. And again, I think when you're looking at these leagues, you do have to be careful to think about the history of the leagues and the rules of the leagues. When you think about college football, there's nowhere else to go, right? So they can put rules out there. You got to play 3 years or, yeah, mm-hmm. I have to wait 3 years. In basketball, there are opportunities, right, where people can go do different things. Whenever Jordan played 3 years. I think Ewing played 3 or 4 years.
Bird, Magic.
When the NBA went away from that, did the NBA start to kill their partner a long time ago?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And you look at people, I remember growing up and asking that question, which in hindsight, I guess that's not a question most kids would ask. I was destined to do this, Mike. But the conversation back then was, no, it's always going to be on top because you might not have Kobe Bryant, but you've got J.J. Redick, and you put him in a Duke uniform, and it feels larger than life. It become a national star. There's always going to be great spirit, great competition. In hindsight, Kobe Bryant probably would have – college basketball is a different sport with Kobe Bryant, with LeBron James, with Dwight Howard. You look at all these guys that went straight to the NBA before they – because for a while they were doing that. And they missed out on a whole generation of
basketball icons. That's what it was for me growing up, right?
Yeah, it was never that for me. So yeah. It's like they missed out on an entire generation of icons. And then they moved back to, okay, let's bring them for 1 year. I would almost rather not have them at all, personally, because, like I said, by the time you get to know them, by the time it feels like a team, they're gone. And you start it over and over. And every year is a clean slate. Duke's had a different starting five for 15 years in a row, it feels.
Yeah.
And prior to that, it was you had J.J. Redick for 4 years. You had – when they were letting guys go straight to the NBA, the guys who did go to college tended to stay in college.
And Doug, I think, to me, the college basketball season, it's almost like there's negative feedback effects. So when you care less, then you're watching less at the beginning. And you're not really paying attention until, I don't know, February, January, right?
March.
And when you're talking about how short these careers are, it's really not like people are watching them from late November all the way through March, right? They're tuned in for a couple of weeks to see the guys that are about to leave their favorite team.
And a lot of the time, I would say the majority of, obviously, of the audience is just watching March Madness. And a lot of, because of the youth and inexperience, a lot of times those senior-led teams tend to go a little bit further in the football, messing me up, still in football mode, in the bracket, March Madness. And so you go watch Lonzo Ball play a game or two, or you go watch a lot of Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett play, which that felt different because people did watch them throughout the season. They were a lot more of a spectacle throughout the season. But a lot of these top prospects types are only really being watched for one or two games in the NCAA tournament. And then they're gone. And then it's rebuilding for that team. And it's starting to watch those guys in the summer league. I almost think their first couple NBA games, they probably are getting more exposure than they're getting in March.
Yeah. It's almost like they've moved it to college basketball is becoming the level of minor league baseball. Right. It's something for the hardcore fans that are into, but probably very little.
I think the difference is it has that local market passion still. That MLB, Braves fans they're fired up about the Braves every year. And they're it's that same thing in North Carolina and Kentucky. And it's not like a local minor league team.
But I'll throw this out at you. I have a PhD student who went to Duke and camped out, lived in the tent for her Carolina tickets. And her perception is that fandom has really cratered since Coach K left. Now, I suspect she's both right and she's wrong. I suspect she's wrong about the hardcore fandom. but right. she might be right about the casual fandom. And these are both critical components to it. And I'm sure the Duke kids are still camping out, but it's a social event and it's a tradition. And there used to be this guy, Coach K, who was really great. And now there's this kid from Schaumburg who's coaching the team, who a wait and see kind of attitude. And I don't even know who they play against in terms of who coaches Carolina at this point. So I suspect we've gone from these household names to the guys that are following the legends.
Yeah. And I think it's been both on the court and on the sideline, right? Because basketball, college basketball, the one thing it still had when we lost having Jordan and Magic and Bird, the true elite talents. Those guys are in the pros by the time they get going, but you still had the coaching brands. And I felt like that.
I want to interrupt you. Who are the iconic college basketball coaches right now?
Right now?
Yeah, right now. Who do we got left?
Izzo.
I can think of three. Izzo.
Bill Self.
I think this one is too obvious. It's too top of mind. Calipari.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Although I'm not a huge believer, but that's my hot take. I don't think Calipari is that great of a coach.
And look, I think the results have dwindled down a little bit the last couple of years. But in terms of like those marquee names, I would say those are the three left, unless I'm
blanking on somebody. We're blanking on somebody. For a while, you'd have a Final Four with Izzo, Bill Self, Coach K, and Roy Williams. And that alone there was that level of familiarity, right, that the casual fan, onlooker could connect to and kind of step into the story halfway through or in the last chapter and enjoy it and feel some level of significance. But when it's these kids are all kids you've never heard of or seen before, and then the coaches are total strangers and they feel like a poor man's version, knockoff, Walmart version Coach K, Walmart version Roy Williams out there, it does take away some of that interest.
And that's great, right? Because I think that's, and on some level, that's totally unfair, but it's also completely legitimate, right? The Walmart version, because again, if these guys were getting all the hype, if they were still being promoted, whoever the next NFL quarterback is, or whoever the next NBA star, if they were still, or who the next Caitlin Clark is.
Yeah.
Would care more. And so it's tough, but I think it's fair, right? That these brands are not being built, so these brands will never truly act like these great brands.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Doug. A lot of interesting things. And I don't know. Do you want to talk NFL? The other topic, let's avoid the NFL. Okay, so here's the NFL news. Will Levis has turned out to be the best player in the league. He's leading the league in passer rating, 4 touchdowns,
oh my God.
No interceptions. Again, called that one. My future favorite player, dominating the league statistically. I don't even want to
hear a jersey. We've been like hyping this up for so long. And at the beginning of the season, I remember, run it back if you're listening, run it back to our podcast before the season. We're like, man, I just want to see Will Levis on the field. And it felt like it was going to happen at some point. Like Tannehill's, not because he's good enough, but because Tannehill's mediocre enough and that team, that fan base always feels like they're quarterback away. Let's just throw in the young guy, see if he's the difference. And here we are and was not disappointed. Shoot, there was a lot of hate. There was a lot of people saying, why is this guy being discussed as number one? Why are people even talking about him over Bryce Young? Uh-oh. We might have ourselves a Josh Allen here. Not to be dramatic, but he could be the greatest quarterback of all time.
I love the hot take. I'm not willing to go that far, but God, it's true. Okay, Doug, some sports are struggling, right? I think sports in general are struggling and some sports specifically are struggling. Maybe the one that's in the most dire shape and doesn't even realize it is boxing. And so over the weekend, we had Tyson Fury beating Francis Ngannou in a disputed split decision, with the key being, okay, the betting line was essentially Fury, you had to bet $2,000 to win $1,000. So an enormous favorite, the heavyweight champion of the world, generated 1.5 million pay-per-view buys worth $125 million. And most of the viewers seem to think that Ngannou actually won. And so over the last couple of years, we have had boxing have the endure the Paul brothers. We've had McGregor versus essentially going the distance with Mayweather.
Yep.
A lot of strange stuff to the point where the credibility of boxing might be at just about zero. Now, I think boxing has always been a sport where people were a little bit suspicious of, oh, they're this guy's fighting weak opponents to get to the undefeated record so they can have the big marquee deal. But boxing has a really bad look. And again, maybe to wrap it up, you just think through all this, that if you went back in time 100 years ago and told the American sports fan, or 80 years ago, that boxing was going to be struggling to survive or struggling to have credibility, and baseball was going to be struggling, I think they would have looked at you like you were crazy. And so in the course of, let's say, three generations, the major American, I think that the major American sports, you go back 100 years or 75 years ago, were baseball, horse racing, and boxing.
How's horse racing doing, Mike?
Done. Done.
Yeah. So that's if you told, I don't know, me 100 years from now, my theoretical still alive self, that the NFL and NBA and college football are practically irrelevant.
Yeah. That it's now women's softball, track and field, and pickleball, right? It might be-
you forgot lacrosse.
Yeah. Okay. Doug, every week you've got some, you find some videos for us. Which of the videos stuck out for you in terms of fan? You're too young for it. Back in the 90s, there used to be something called Girls Gone Wild. So on late night TV, they would show these videotapes of girls, I guess PG-13, maybe soft R-rated kind of behaviors. And you could buy these videotapes called Girls Gone Wild. So Fans Gone Wild. What was notable this week for you?
Since you started with Girls Gone Wild, I can't leave out Chargers lady is back. She's with what appears to be her significant other and children. Rowdy as ever. It still looks completely staged and fake. There's still debate in every comment section. I think it's genuine, Mike. And if I go to a Chargers game ever, I don't want an autograph from Justin Herbert. I want a picture with Girl Gone Wild. Chargers girl gone wild. That lady's incredible. The level of passion is through the roof. And she would have been a great, great addition to the Spike Squad when I was on there. That's exactly what you look for in a candidate. And it's unfortunate that she attended another school, apparently, perhaps Oregon, since they seem to be as infatuated with her as I am.
You know how good she is, Doug? She didn't even need a costume.
No, she didn't paint. Nothing. Yeah. She's the center of, and I think she's going to be for every Chargers game from now on. I think that the camera's going to find her, because we talked last week about social media and how there's almost incentive to post stuff that people don't want when you're in the NFL in terms of Taylor Swift, because it's going to fill up the comment sections. I think people want Chargers fan, and I think the incentives are encouraging that. And so Girl Gone Wild is going to be a staple. She's going to be synonymous with the Los Angeles Chargers brand. I think it's just what they need as a football franchise in a market with another football franchise, both of which kind of struggle in terms of fandom. I think this can help set the Chargers apart, and I'm all for it. It almost makes me want to be a Chargers fan.
I'm gonna disagree with you on this one. Okay. And this is based, my disagreement is based on nothing. Yeah, you're coming at this from a pure place, I think, of saying, look at her enthusiasm. She's a great act. I'm coming at this as people are mean, and I see a backlash against Chargers girl, Chargers lady.
There definitely is a backlash, but I think the fact that there's a conversation is a step in the right direction for the Los Angeles football Chargers. So next fan gone wild. Man, we had quite a few this week. Favorite probably is, okay, this is like, the audacity of this fan is next level. Kansas football fan, which sounds like an oxymoron. This guy put the moron in oxymoron, though. He goes onto the field, and he's holding up an L to one of the Oklahoma players and just loser. He is a foot away from this man, just begging to get pummeled like that kid did
armored in
the
up.
LSU Ole Miss game.
Yeah, literally wearing armor at that point, a helmet and pads, and in great shape. It's
Sportsman of the Week, though, has got to be the OU player that didn't crush that kid, because it's almost like that's one for sure. If he had, the comment section is, kid deserved it. What do you think's going
to happen? You know what? And maybe I haven't paid as much attention until this year, but it seems like there's more of these rushing the field situations.
There's also, when people do rush the field, they're not just celebrating. They're going to rub it in the face of the other team. There's more of that audacity.
Doesn't it seem like we're about two or three of these away from something bad happening and no more rushing the field?
Can't you see him getting headbutted by and breaking his nose and his skull by a guy in a football helmet, college athletes? It does feel like a ticking time bomb. And so I don't know. That one was – we do a fan of the week every week, and that one was
– Here, let me ask you.
He's almost
let me ask
too
you,
far. He's too far.
Let me ask a different question on this. Okay, so look, I think we both agree. Tennessee tearing down their goalpost to throw him in the river. Outstanding. Makes us all happy. But when you're, I don't know, it's like there's different levels. I wish I could think of the worst or most pointless of the rushing the field. But when you're, I don't know, when your historically weak team beats the number seven team in the country in the middle of a season, is there really anything positive to rushing that field?
I think when you're Kansas and it's football, you've got to enjoy any win to the fullest. And the opportunity to beat a top 10 team, I think you got to lose your mind. I think this is your chance. I think it's your time to go. So it sounds like we're going to be on different sides of this conversation.
No, because I'm about to change my mind.
That was it? I persuaded you?
No, the Kansas fans persuaded me because of them pulling the goalpost out and then finding some, a lake or a swamp, a pond.
How far did they have to travel in Kansas to find a body of water that would fit a goal?
To find that sad little pond, right?
Yeah, it was that was straight out of the Tennessee playbook. And man, I love to see it. I don't know why schools let this happen. I don't know how much goalposts cost, but it reminds me of the old 22 Jump Street scene where they're always trying to take the goalpost down, and it had happened and they cemented it into the ground. But these schools, it seems like they almost are doing that. Like they have a goalpost removing utensil ready at the end of a game to help the fans take it out of the stadium and toss it into some body of water. They might have even built a man-made lake for that, Mike. And I think they should outside of every stadium where there might be an upset on alert. And so, again, Kansas fans won the day. Never thought we'd see it with Kansas football.
Doug, don't you like to think that they had to walk like a mile and a half with that thing?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I've been to Kansas. There's not a lot of water there. So,
yeah, I'm trying to think. If this was Urbana-Champaign, how far you would have to go to find some water to throw the goalpost in.
Yeah, that was also an interesting upset because I watched some of the game. The stadium was not full, Mike. So you've got a 75% full stadium rushing the field. Not the same energy as Tennessee. Not up there with Tennessee. But, hey, the people that were there gave it their all. So we got a tip of the cap to them. Those are our fans of the week. Anyone that removes a goalpost and finds a body of water.
And so, Doug, and then how much of this now – look, how much of this is now for the show? How much of this is now for social media content?
That's what I'm saying. It's almost like the school was – it's almost like they want them to do that. Do you remember Tennessee carrying the thing out? Like, they were going up the concourse or up the first level – of the stadium with the goalpost. I'm like, I don't know where there's a goalpost size exit, but that thing wasn't taken apart before going out. It's like they had a plan for it. It's like someone was directing the whole thing. So it does make you wonder, not to be a conspiracy theorist. In addition to those fandom moments, we had a couple like teams, players, organizations really getting in on the fun with Halloween and also with the Taylor Swift nonsense we've talked about the last couple of weeks. This was inevitable. This was, the Chiefs, Travis Kelce, been asking for this. Broncos, terrible football team, beat the Chiefs in Denver. And as soon as the game ends, Taylor Swift blasting through the stadium. Again, the audacity, the disrespect that we're seeing. I was pretty impressed by that. What were you going to say?
Taylor Swift is bulletproof, though. Taylor Swift came, got what she wanted out of this. And I think it's all, look, when these leagues start to ride these little media storms, you know, the people creating the media storms are the winners, right?
Yeah.
It's not clear to me that the leagues win in even the medium term, right? There's some eyeballs on it, but we're at that part of the cycle now where everything's there. It's a Halloween costume and it's a goof now, right? And now we're going to play Taylor Swift to taunt the Chiefs.
Yeah. it's a taunting mechanism, and you have to think it always will be. You imagine if it falls through with Taylor and Kelsey and she writes some savage song about what a terrible guy he was to her. And the opposing team's going to play that every time.
And he drops a pass, and they go right to that music.
Yeah. Cue the music. Show Taylor Swift on the screen while the field goal kicker's under duress. Like, it's headed that direction. But, I mean, to your point, well played by her, because she – I don't know if you noticed this. She stopped showing up to the games the second that people got annoyed by it and the second that she was no longer in movie promotion mode. She's back to preparing for tour. And she got what she wanted. The rest is the aftermath of it isn't her problem. And so pretty masterful work. She is,
and the aftermath of it is irrelevant to her fans, right? Her fans couldn't care less.
No, they couldn't care less.
They've moved on. They're a brief visit.
Yeah. So my last observation, this isn't necessarily fans gone wild. This is more players gone wild. Halloween was yesterday. And Victor Wembanyama had a big Halloween game, and they always show the players walking into the tunnel, walking into the arena, generally dripped out with some crazy swag clothes and stuff. But for Halloween, a lot of the players will dress up. And Victor Wembanyama, addressing the rumors that he is Slenderman, the sort of Sasquatch of horror figures who may or may not be real, showing up in full Slenderman attire, with his face completely covered in white, to his own game. His nickname, he's been nicknamed Slenderman before by people in the comments section. So I thought that was really clever. And I don't know which I like more.
What a great costume, right? I don't know Slenderman, but I just pulled up and I just Googled it and looking at the images. And he had that costume 80% down before when he woke up that morning, Doug.
He pretty much just had to put on a suit.
And I guess some white facial covering.
Kind of ski mask with the eyes covered.
Now, that being said, really a disturbing looking character.
I think you got to embrace it, though. I think you got to embrace it if you're Wembanyama. Somebody called you a name, maybe in a derogatory way, and he just owns it. He takes ownership of it. And he's an interesting guy because we don't know his personality yet. Like, he's just been this kind of freak to everyone. And there's not this real personal Giannis. You get the feeling he's this real genuine guy. Jokic, same type of thing. You get the feeling he almost cares about other things more than basketball. Funny guy. Luka Doncic, super confident, super competitive, always trash talking, but always smiling, having fun, kind of Steph Curry like. Wembanyama is a total wild card. He's a household name in basketball world, but nobody knows anything about him. And I think there's almost this assumption that he's just this bland guy because all you ever see is him just playing basketball and that's it. So for him to begin his personal branding with Slenderman, it was the first time I've seen anything non-basketball from him.
Okay, now let's get a little crazy here. So Slenderman was created on June 10th, 2009 in a thread in the Something Awful Internet Forum. So it was just created on the equivalent of a Reddit or 4chan thread. Okay, now forum poster Eric Knudsen under his pseudonym Victor Surge.
Victor.
So it was created by a guy with a fake name of Victor.
Or maybe it was a real first name and a fake last name. Wembanyama created Slenderman. He invented himself.
I hope he owns a piece of Slenderman. Does anyone own Slenderman now, or is it public domain?
There's got to be, because there's been some gaming elements, I think, and I don't know. I'm sure it'll be a film at some point. But hey, I found your actor. I found your lead man. LeBron James had Space Jam. Wembanyama, he might have Slenderman.
God, I love it. I love that, to just play counter to that kind of Space Jam. I was going to say all American. I don't even really know what the right word is, right? This very wholesome kind of character. But whoever's doing Slender Man, I hope he got paid. I hope Wembanyama got paid for that in a way. Because
I'm sure he's paid plenty for his Slender Man build.
But Doc, this kind of goes back to where we started this conversation, right? Where everything is about audience and impressions. And so he took this character and he has put this character out there for millions upon millions of people and not people that might have been playing the video game character. So he's done more promotion for the Slender Man brand than probably has ever been done just in the course of these echoes of social media, because I can't go on Instagram and not see that in multiple places.
I would love to see Victor Wembanyama highlights if someone photoshopped him into the Slender Man costume. See Slender Man take it down the court, throwing down. See him, he blew past on that game and threw down a poster on somebody. And you're right last week when you said your brain doesn't have a category for it. Like, he'll take off from somewhere where is he going to take a floater? And then he ends up dunking the ball because you forget his arms are like 10 feet long. And it's always something I've never seen before. So I will tune into every televised San Antonio Spurs basketball game because I don't care if he scores 7 points or if he scores 40 points. He's such a he's something altogether new in a league where we've seen Jordan and then a bunch of knockoff Jordans. And then it's been a lot of the same for a very long time. This is something really new.
No, he's definitely in that kind of strange list of guys that I will watch. If I have an opportunity to see it, I will. It's not directly the same, but it's like for me, whenever I could see a Bears game with Justin Fields, I wanted to watch it because something different was happening. And so if he's playing 100%, did they have him on Christmas Day or anything yet?
I don't think so. I don't know if anyone anticipated that his rise would be as quick as it's been in terms of his media favor, but
he's averaging 16 points a game 4 games into the season.
Yeah, as a rookie, as a 19-year-old, and
7.5 rebounds, he's already got.
It for me, it reminds me of when Zion Williamson was at Duke, and I'm not a Duke guy. I had no ties to any of those teams they were playing except for Virginia, which he beat both times, and then Virginia won the national championship. That's beside the point. They were a spectacle to watch. Everyone tuned in to watch Zion anytime that, you know, Duke UNC were watching. But Duke, North Carolina State, sure, why not? You know, Zion's playing. Is he going to do – we're going to watch this 300-pound man do a 360 windmill and a fast break. Never seen anything like it before. And so this is in that same category. The difference is we're talking about a kid from overseas, and he's doing it at the NBA level. We're not seeing a man amongst boys in college. We're seeing a boy amongst men, but very much hanging and holding his own and – potentially positioning himself to change the game forever. And so, again, it's incredibly fascinating. And I'm interested to see not just his on the court play, but how he develops his kind of brand and what's his shoe deal going to be? What's his advertising? What kind of personality does he have? Slender Man is the first thing we've seen of, oh, he has some kind of sense of humor, this guy.
Doug, what's he going to do worldwide, right? Is he going to transcend LeBron James kind of numbers and social? Because he might be, I know there's other international guys, but is he going to be the first truly international basketball superstar, maybe since Jordan? And I don't think I'm articulating that, but is he the kind of guy that has this mass international appeal?
But I'm Kobe.
That's fair.
Had that and LeBron some, but the difference between Kobe, Jordan, LeBron, and Wembanyama is not coming from the U.S.
That's like what I mean.
He's Team World. Right. And if they do a Team World versus Team USA, if they ever do that, which I think they should and have been on that train for forever for the All-Star game, you know, Wembanyama is the face of Team World.
Now, Doug, don't you want to see, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but the matchup I want to see is him versus Jokic.
And Jokic on the same team.
But where one guy's not jumping, not using his body, just being smart in terms of movements. And the other guy is, you know, has 6 inches more of length than anyone else has ever seen, right? It's going to be a, but I think you're right. That's what's going to make this so special, watching him develop and watching something. And I guess the right word is watching stuff that's truly new this season.
Yeah. For the first time in a long time, I think when Steph Curry came into the NBA and almost introduced that deep three that we see all the time from everyone now. But that was, I remember tuning into the Warriors even when before they were winning championships, because it was like, this is really interesting. This is something new. Someone that you thought probably was undersized and wasn't really cut out for the NBA, just totally dominating and making everyone look silly. I felt like that a little bit with Luka Doncic, another one where, and with Jokic, where it's this guy's maybe the least athletic looking guy on the court, but he's such a crafty player that he makes everyone look silly constantly. But we've had those guys. We had Larry Bird was like that. Manu Ginobili was like that, although kind of a more athletic version. But we've always, that's always been part of basketball. Someone like Wembanyama has not always been part of basketball. He's never been, not any sport has ever seen a guy like this. And yeah, I'm excited for that. And one last note on Halloween, Steve Kerr dressing up as his modern day NBA player equivalent, Kevin Huerter, on Halloween for a game in which the Warriors were playing the Sacramento Kings and going out on the court and meeting Kevin Huerter dressed as Kevin Huerter. I thought that was pretty spectacular. He's one of those coaches. He's the anti-Nick Saban, anti-Bill Belichick. He's just having fun. I put that
down as like the most wholesome moment of the week kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's heartwarming. But it's like he's successful at the level of a Bill Belichick or a Nick Saban, but he's having fun. He seems like he enjoys it. So he's like the most likable dynasty coach in my lifetime, I think.
That's fair. Okay, we'll wrap it up here. As always, more content at www.fandomanalytics.com. Thanks.